Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Hello, dear listener, Neil here. A very warm welcome to Nick and Neil's History Show and our Millwall Summer Specials. The aim of Nick and myself is to build a library of 20, 25-minute shows you can dip in and out of in the car, in the gym or on the train, anywhere you like, really. This is proper history, lots of unbelievable stories that we should know but don't. So here we are, rescuing these stories from obscurity and breathing new life into them. Nick and I feel that as a club, we don't make the most of our rich history, and it's a subject that is often ignored. And we hope this series will bring to life some of the events and characters of our past. It's been a real pleasure to research this series, and I hope you enjoy listening to them as much as we have enjoyed making them. Enjoy.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
So, Neil, we're going to talk about one of the most dangerous moments in Millwall history. Which happened quite early in our existence. We very nearly didn't exist at all. You and me would have been, you might have been an Exeter fan, I might have been a Charlton fan, I don't know what I would have been, but for this, if things had turned out differently in 1901.
Mate, it's scary, isn't it? What would I have done for 30, 40 years in London?
What lives would we have had but for this? We speak, listeners, of the near disbandment of Millwall Athletic in the year 1901, and the circumstances which we've mentioned before in previous shows, but they're worth repeating here, Neil. Millwall Athletic, Millwall Rovers, Millwall Athletic were the product of the docks, the Isle of Dogs, the West India docks, the Millwall docks, and very much it reflected the area, and pretty much that was almost the reason how we came to disband, wasn't it? The docks.
Yeah, it was. The Millwall Dock Company, I think, owned our ground, which is the Athletic ground at the time.
Yeah.
Which for those people who are familiar with the Isle of Dogs, is actually Asda now, isn't it?
Cross Harbour.
Is where Asda is, at Cross Harbour. So if you're ever there and you're doing your shopping, pay homage. That was actually the Athletic ground that was our home, and but they wanted it to turn it into a timber yard. Our lease was up. They decided that they needed it to expand the docks, because there was a lot of traffic coming into the docks then, and they wanted to kick out Millwall. So how close we came to actually disbanding, I guess we'll never really know. But allegedly, we'd actually resigned from the Southern League.
Yeah.
And this was the end of Millwall Football Club. There were reports that players had been released, and we were told players that we weren't going to keep them on for the following season. And it was very, very dark days. It was probably as close as the club has ever come to actually not being in existence anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, you've found a London Evening Standard report, listeners, dated 26th of April. 1901. In fact, prior to that, The Athletic, which was a sports newspaper, mentions the Mill Docks requirement of a team. This was the Athletic ground was quite a large area of ground, Neil, wasn't it? It was a big oval running track, football pitch, running track, and stands around the grandstands around the the running area. So it's actually quite a large area of land. It was needed for timber, as you said. I think the threat of disbandment was very real. I mean, the Evening Standard that I was just mentioning mentions the approaching disbandment of the Millwall club is a blow to football in East London. The Dockers were very popular a few seasons back, and few would have thought that popular support would fail them. Their ground is no longer available and another suitable enclosure cannot be found. So it was desperate stuff, actually.
Yeah, and I think it was, it's a built-up area now, isn't it? And
very much so. Yeah,
they couldn't find the ground anywhere for us to play. There was it was factories, docks, and all kinds of stuff over there, wasn't it? Slums and.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at the map show. I mean, it's that great loop in the river for any of our overseas listeners that may be listening to this. But if you look at the map of London, the River Thames takes a very strange loop, famously shown on the front beginning of EastEnders each week. But what that means is it's a very limited area for space. And it was the heart of the London docks, which back then was a thriving industry in need of ever more space. And unfortunately, the Athletic ground fell foul of that. And there was an emergency meeting held, actually, wasn't there? I'm just reading the Poplar Town Hall, Neil, in May. An emergency committee was set up to try and save Millwall.
Yeah, and it attracted MPs. There were councillors there. There were members of the Southern League there. There was even Tottenham's chairman there who paraded the FA Cup. Good God almighty. Can you imagine Daniel Levy winning the FA Cup and then bringing it down to Millwall?
Down to Millwall.
Bloody faces because some misfortunes beset John Berylson and the club's about to close.
Well, the thing is, I mean, it's worth just looking at a few dates because, I mean, the club obviously had been founded in 1885. So what's that? That's 26 years before these events that we're talking about. But it was quite a dramatic 26 years in the sense that we very rapidly became one of the big names of Southern football, Neil. Champions of the Southern League, I think, twice in the mid-1890s. So just, 5 years before this threat to our existence. A bit like Liverpool suddenly finding that Anfield's been bought by the Liverpool Docks and they can't, there's nowhere for them to play anymore. So they're going to have to close it. I know it's a strange analogy given the difference in modern football, but it's that kind of idea that a major football name was just going to disappear overnight.
We were a huge name. We were probably, there was probably us and Woolwich Arsenal, the Arsenal. We were probably the two biggest clubs in London at the time, in the South, although Tottenham might dispute that. They were
a rising side. But I mean, the Evening Standard report mentions the battles between Millwall and the Arsenal from Woolwich, and this was seen as one of London's big rivalries. But the club
was the big rivalry in London. Yeah, West Ham were nothing. I think there's a report they were hoping that West Ham might have the ability to take up our mantle to carry on what we had done, and there was scepticism that they could actually do it. So that just shows, I think, how close the club actually came to being no more. And this public meeting at Poplar Town Hall was very much to try and garner some support for us, to get some ideas and to get some money in the bank and just...
Yeah, muster some support. I mean, Poplar Town Hall is still there. I'm sure that I've driven past it on the way on the... as you come along the road towards where Rotherhithe Tunnel is, and I think that the building is still there. It may have been a library or maybe used for... you know, weddings and like since. But at this point, it was a functioning town hall for the district of Poplar. Some names here. I mean, I think sometimes, well, I think one of the reasons I really like doing these shows, Neil, is that there's a lot of men, mostly men, but a lot of names from the past who've played massive parts in the continuation and creation of our club that we now love, and that, you know, hopefully the children will continue to support on into the future, we hope. And but for these people, that wouldn't exist. And this very much is reflected in this meeting. So we've got names like the mayor of Poplar, probably an unknown name now, but we're going to say his name because that's the purpose of the show. It's Richard Henry Green, mayor of Poplar, all, you know, arranged for this meeting to take place. There was a very large audience in the room. Sydney Buxton, MP for Poplar, a Liberal. But also another chap here, a Conservative, Tommy Dewar, MP, a football fan. You know, it's just always interesting when you look back and see who played a big part and how little known their names are now. It seems there's a sadness tinged with a pride mixed together in these shows, I find.
Yeah, the Dewar Shield was actually the forerunner of the modern day Charity Shield. It was the best amateur team in England, played the best professional team. Right. The Dewar Cup in America, I think, yeah, was played for many years. I think it was the college final or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
So these were people that this was an outlet. This was entertainment. Don't forget, back then, you had very, very little entertainment. In fact, probably no entertainment at all. There was the pub,
the music hall, or the football, wasn't it? You know, that was the kind of triangle where people spent their lives. Also, some reps from the London County Council, which was a prelim of the, what they call it now, the GLA, as well as reps from the Southern League, and Nat Whittaker from the Southern League, and Roberts and Deacock from Tottenham. One thing that often leaps out at me, Neil, and this is a side point, I know we're trying to avoid side points in these shows, but is how much support other clubs would give each other back then, and even during the Second World War, with ground sharing and support, in this case here from Tottenham. You've mentioned the FA Cup being paraded at this meeting. It's quite remarkable. You can't imagine it on the same scale now, can you? You know, your point about Levy, you just can't picture that happening now.
No, I think it's right. Fairly. I think we're tribal, aren't we now? And to be honest, would anybody be disappointed to see Millwall disappear now? You've got to ask yourself. I know everyone wants to be like us.
That's a different show, Neil. I think you're right.
But I think Buxton hit it on the head when he said it would be a calamity to allow Millwall to collapse. Yeah. And in the event of the directors obtaining a new site for a limited number of years, it pledges itself to do everything within its power to provide the necessary funds, I think, for the layout of the new ground. He didn't blame the Millwall Dock Company, who I think would disappear just before we moved south of the river.
Ironic twist of fate.
Yeah, they were swallowed up, I think, by the Port of London. I think the Port of London.
Yeah, that would be the kind of successor to the private companies almost. I mean, the purpose of the meeting was A, to find land, and secondly, to muster money to buy that land. And lo and behold, Lady Margaret Charteris did have some ground, which would be available for us at the right price. And that price, it seems, was £1,200, a substantial sum of money back then, Neil, 1,200 quid. Very few could have rustled that up very quickly. Seems we had 250 already donated, but an appeal was made to the public to get the money together to buy the new land that would become known as North Greenwich. Now Millwall Park, of course, down by Mudchute Station, just a couple of stops along on the Duckland Railway.
Yeah, I think they were trying to sell 750 shares at £1 each. So
yeah,
considerable amounts of money. But But I think they find that the problem was actually getting people to pledge and then paying up.
We've said it before, we're going to say it again. Everything changes, yet nothing changes.
Exactly. And I think, as you probably will find with the, well, with the Lions Trust, getting people to say, oh, yeah, no, I support that, and then paying their pound or two membership. Yeah,
it's a different matter, maybe. We'll cross that bridge when it comes.
Yeah.
But I do love this quote you found here, because, again, it's the eternal, you know, I feel sometimes history is actually like an eternal loop, listeners, where we go round and round the same things. But in the, we just mentioned the problem of getting people to pay a pound for 750 shares. Mind you, a pound then would have been worth more money, but anyway. I don't know who this quote's from. I think it might be from one of the Millwall representatives. It says, our trouble, Neil, is that the local crowd is not a large one. Nothing changes there. I think if people give us sixpence a week, then we could always rely upon a gate to meet the expenses of a good team. The average gate fetches £60, 6-0, but we need a steady, reliable income of £100 a week. Then we could best calculate how to spend it. So this is one of the points made in the meeting, that the club is saying they need more money. But as some wag in the audience replies, that we hadn't done badly on their £60 gates with a good team to date, but as ever, so the club wanted more money and they weren't getting it.
Yeah, that's right. I think that came from Beveridge, the Millwall secretary at the time.
Nothing new there then, is it?
Eggs, the chairman, who interesting, he was an interesting character. I think he was a career civil servant. And wanted to actually, ironically, when Millwall departed North Greenwich, wanted to try and keep us north of the river.
Right.
But Tom Thorne, the driving force, and name we've mentioned a lot of times, wanted to move us south of the river. And ultimately, So it's a recurring theme. It's a never-ending, it's like a vicious circle, isn't it, really? But it must be said that Millwall was actually the only form of recreation for those people living on the Isle of Dogs at the time.
And so, we've got to say, although it was, you know, the docks were the foundation of the national, London's wealth, national wealth, very little of that money went to the local people. To be a docker was a very shiftless existence. You know, there was no security or provision for, you know, pensions or anything of that kind. It was not an easy way to make a life. And this was one of London's poorest districts, which, I mean, all of these factors, the lack of numbers, the constant need for bigger crowds that weren't there on the island, but led eventually to the move southwards to Coldblow Lane. But we'll save that perhaps for another show, because I think that's quite an interesting subject in its own right, the move to Coldblow Lane. But to conclude this particular period, we would survive, and as we all know, we wouldn't have a club now, but we did survive it. Land was found from Lady Charteris, waste ground, I think. Not an easy ground to bring together. Now, from what I've read, The North Greenwich pitch was a very muddy and difficult surface to maintain for the groundsman, the famous man I mentioned the other day, actually, on Twitter. Elijah Moore would actually lay out the pitch in what is now Millwall Park, but then was just more waste ground than anything else, and not an easy surface to get to play football on.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of the ground around there was quite marshy, wasn't it? And
marshy and muddy, yeah.
Yeah, and difficult. Very difficult. See, yeah, but it was industrial land. It wasn't the green grass at home, was it? This was a closely packed manufacturing neighbourhood, wasn't it? The LCC didn't have any ground.
No.
And the Charteris family owned a lot of property and ground on the Isle of Dogs.
Daughter of the second Earl of Glengall. There's a Glengall road in the history, of course.
There was Glengall Board School as well, which was a school in the district, and a lot of our players went there. I think the Voises went there. But it was a worrying time. But she had us by the short and curlies, I think. Yeah, this wasn't charitable. This wasn't a charitable thing. It wasn't, oh, well, we'll give the little people a little bit of recreation. We'll give them, yeah, we'll give them their football club. This was a money-making venture. We had to pay.
Absolutely, it was. Absolutely. £1,200, no small sum. Miraculously, really, Neil, I think, given everything we've said, miraculously, the 22nd of May, Jay Beveridge, man we've referred to already, Mill Secretary, told the London League that the club had completed all the arrangements for continuing as an active football club, and they had fixed up a seven-year lease. So this was just for a seven-year lease on Lady Charteris's ground. And as he describes it here, the new enclosure not far from the old ground. And the work will begin to get it ready for the new season, which will be from late August, September onwards. I think you're right. I mean, obviously, it was a commercial transaction, although Lady Charteris did donate land to the local church and the library, I see, in Cubitt Town, and laid out the island gardens and so on and so forth. But this was a deal. This was the, you know, art of the deal, whichever way you want to call it. So
Nick, I think £1,200 in 1901 was worth £157,000 in today's terms.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously, that modern property values are through the roof. So, you know, you can say, well, that's that. But this was a poverty-struck area, Neil. A club not sloshing around with cash, and clearly not backed to some extent by big names, but not so much that they'd muster up that kind of money as a charitable act. So, I think it's another point. I think I just wanted to make that Mill saved itself. Yes, it did, but it saved itself through the efforts of its fans and those that were willing to stand up and pull it together. I think there's a lesson in life and history there. No one's ever come in really from the outside and done us many favours. It's only what we've achieved ourselves that's led to the continuation of the football club. The other thing that just strikes me is that's a seven-year lease, which this is 1901. That would have been a clock ticking on the club's existence on the island, wouldn't it? We'd eventually move in 1910.
Yeah, that's right. And I know we say it quite a lot, but there is direct correlation, isn't there? Again, between then and the modern day, and the battle for the den that you were part of, and a couple of years ago with the property developers coming in and trying to force us out, and so. Yeah, but it's almost like every part of Millwall history is moved to modern day.
We're doomed to repeat an endless cycle unless we can break it, listeners. But there we are. It's a fascinating period. It's a fascinating story with a happy ending, thankfully. It was very nearly not a happy ending. And I don't know, maybe there would have been more sympathy at a certain level for us back then than we might. Although we did get quite a lot of sympathy, Neil, with a surprising amount of support came our way in 2017 when we're fighting Lewisham Council, as we found in 1901. I think more people like us than we like to give ourselves credit for sometimes. I think we all enjoy the no one likes us reputation, but I think there's more support for us out there than we'd sometimes like to think. There was a happy ending, Neil, 1901, and that's down to the efforts of the people we've mentioned. So I think we should take this chance to take our hats off to the men who saved Millwall Athletic in 1901.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.